All right, everybody. Welcome to episode 7 of Infield Chatter, the AZ Stakefit podcast. I'm back. Ha-ha, I bet you missed me. Don't answer that. I'm here with Tim Jeffcoat because Devin has some computer problems or something. We're recording Sunday morning on Easter because Tim's Jewish and I'm unloved, so I'm not implying that Jewish people are unloved. These are two separate situations.
Yeah.
just in case anyone misconstrues that.
Mm-hmm. This is the anti Easter Bunny agenda show.
Correct. No Easter Bunny at all after this point now. So anyway, things actually happened last week, so you're not going to hear a 45-minute discussion on the Discworld series. But speaking... I'm kidding. R.I.P. Terry Pratchett. But no, the Diamondbacks made some roster moves, and they made some roster moves that were quite bold. You've probably heard about them at this point, but to summarize, the big things were Trevor Cahill got sent to the Braves for some spare... for like a coffee maker or something.
Mm-hmm.
Cody Ross was just upended, released on the last year of his contract, which was kind of a terrible contract to begin with. So I'm not surprised that that happened. I'm kind of surprised it happened so soon.
Right.
And then there was the announcement that the starting middle infield for most of the season will be Nick Ahmed and Chris Owings, effectively leaving Aaron Hill on the bench and possibly a dead man walking.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
Or trade bait,
yeah.
Making it pretty clear that he's not going to be part of our future plans, so if you've got spare coffee makers that you want to send the Diamondbacks, then call away.
Chase Field's pretty big. You could, you know, there's a lot of places you could strategically put coffee makers.
Yes. Joe DiMaggio, if we could somehow raise him from the dead, would be able to help us with our coffee machine placement.
Yeah, he was one of a kind. The other sort of big-ish thing, well, there's a few big things. I'm just going to summarize them now, and then we'll discuss them in detail. Just on my list, with Cahill traded, that means Archie Bradley's going to be the fifth starter and going to make his major league debut. That's exciting. Yasmani Tomas is going to go to the minors, presumably to work on his defense a little bit and or until Hill gets traded. I mean, that's speculation on my part. I'll go into more detail there. And David Peralta is now the de facto everyday starting left fielder with Ross gone. Mm-hmm. And... there's probably a few more things, but those are kind of the big bullet points. But just to summarize it, that sort of, it's a tacit admission that, hey, Kevin Towers, yeah, you're kind of bad at this, so.
He made a lot of gambles.
And that's the thing with gambling. Sometimes you lose your shirt and are beaten up by a bunch of thick neck guys outside of a casino.
Yep.
Who talk like Edward G. Robinson, shouldn't you?
That's true. Or sometimes you lose $6,000 to the game because you betted on Kentucky.
Ooh, that's rough.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't think there's probably a Diamondbacks fan who is particularly upset about any of those moves. Maybe Aaron Hill, but he's still on the team. Mm-hmm. So he'll still play. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's anyone who's particularly beat up that either one of Cahill or Ross are gone. You know, we're kind of ironically gleeful online about Ross not being on the roster. You know, obviously from a human standpoint, you kind of feel bad for him.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Except for the point that, what is he making, $9 million this year?
Something like that, yeah.
So I don't feel that bad, but, I feel he's partially bad, but it's more of just a sign of the Diamondbacks are going definitely in the youth movement way, not only because they have literally the youngest roster now in the majors, but there's quite a few players that are either, you know, a year or two into their major league career or at least very young. AJ Paul, the entire outfield is incredibly young, you know, between Inciarte, Peralta, and Pollock. Our infield is going to be young with Owings, Ahmed, Lamb, and Goldschmidt's still fairly young as well. He's like, now he's effectively the old guy of the infield. And then Tuffy Gossowitz is really the old guy at only 31. So it's, I mean, and it's kind of going with where the Astros are going, where it's just throw these guys out there, see what happens, and try and build it up from there. So that, I think, is encouraging. Mm-hmm.
Even before they, say, release Ross, or so, when they said, oh, Aaron Hill's probably going to be, or is going to be on the bench, it raised my eye because, oh, you're doing this sort of by merit and not, you know, the size of a guy's paycheck. Because, I mean, when you're in a rebuilding year, that's what you should do. Owings and Ahmed, they may not be, you know, the solution, but they have more of a chance to be long-term than Hill does at this point. You know,
yeah.
It's
also one of those things that, because it's a bunch of young guys, you don't quite know what you have, and there's definitely some excitement in the lineup. The pitching is a big, big question mark.
Mm-hmm.
But it is that sort of formula that we followed in 2007 and 2011 where you can't throw it out, see what happens. You know, you got key veteran guys that maybe get brought in that help out a little bit. You get lucky, and then maybe you do. But even if they – because I really don't think that they're going to be anywhere close to the playoffs. But with all these young players, it should be at least fairly exciting.
Yeah, it should be exciting. It should be fun to watch. I think, yeah, the pitching definitely is the big thing, because if you look up and down the lineup, you say, other than maybe like Ahmed and Gossowitz, but they're more defensive first players, there's not really like a total like weak, like something totally weak, you know what I mean?
Right.
And even with those two guys, like I said, they're pretty good defensively, so it's not like you're throwing insert random. It's not like you're throwing me out there at shortstop.
Right.
I was like thinking, who was a really bad hitting kind of fielding base? Oh, me.
Cliff Pennington.
Yeah, Cliff Pennington.
yeah. So and then even if they don't do well, it's easy to kind of shrug at that and be like, these guys are making what, $400,000 a year, minimum. For the most part, so if they don't do well, then it's not quite as killer as when you're trying to run out a Pennington or a Ross or a Trumbo. Then you feel even worse that they're not producing. So Trumbo is really the big guy left who. You would think at some point, I imagine it's gonna happen. They're probably gonna kind of platoon him a little bit, try and position him in a way that will make him attractive, and then I assume they're gonna dump him somewhere.
I
imagine he's gonna be in the sort of long term plan.
Yeah, because it seems like now that they've sort of Dave Stewart talked about yesterday, he's gotten off the bong and said, yeah, Tomas is going to be an outfielder in the long term future. With as much money as you're dumping into him, it seems like Trumbo's the odd person out because Peralta / Hizziardi are still, you know, cheap. And Trumbo, if he hits okay, you know, that'll up his trade value. And as I said before, he would have value for an American League team looking for some, you know, DH power.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or a stupid team. When you find a stupid team. Mm-hmm. A stupider team.
Yeah, I was going to say. Hi, I'm the general manager of the Atlanta Braves. I think we need a shortstop. This Mark Trumbo guy.
Oh, that would be fantastic to see him try and play short.
I would pay money to see that.
I would pay money. That, yeah. Mm-hmm. That might be a good callback when we get to a different subject, if we get to it, about players you would go out of your way to see.
Ooh, a tease. You know, Cody Ross, he gets a, you know, cool 9 billion, and he still has the dark one inside of him.
Yeah. Steven Burt on the Twitter wants to know who's going to sign him.
Yeah.
Who the heck knows? Mm-hmm. It's hard to say. I mean, he probably has a certain amount of value off the bench. So. Yeah.
As a guy you throw against lefties, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So it may not be right away, but there also may be teams that are going to get him a look and stash him down AAA right away or something. You know, it's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. It's just, it's easy to see how a team, and even the Diamondbacks, we could have had, you know, it would have made sense for us to hang on to him, just not at $9.5 million.
I definitely remember saying this when we first signed Cody Ross, that the idea of Cody Ross being on our team doesn't really offend me. The idea of Cody Ross on our team for 3 years at that much money does.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know. I was kind of surprised. I thought they'd hold on to him a little longer. It just seemed like that was the thing, but nope. Hail Satan.
No more Hail Satan. Sadness. Hello, darkness, my only friend.
Don't cry out loud. But, yeah, I think things are just sort of coming together. And I kind of mentioned it in my summary. I think they're waiting on bringing up Tomas on Hill getting moved. That just seems like the more natural thing, for like a better term, because,
yeah,
I mean, they're going to keep him down in the minors for a bit, work on his defense, fine. But for, you know, the money that they're paying him, you know, the richest contract in Diamondbacks history thus far, it's going to be like, yeah, you're going to have him up there. And I saw some snark from national-type people who are the worst. They're like, oh, you're stuffing your 60-whatever million-dollar guy in AAA. It's like, that's not a new thing, especially with Cuban players. Because I'm actually looking at it right now. Y. Puig?
Yeah, they did that to Puig.
Yeah. I think...
I could be wrong. Maybe I should look this up before I just talk out of my ass. But I feel like Cespedes did for a while, too.
The Red Sox are going to do it with Yoan Moncada, so, you know.
Right. And then the Dodgers just signed, blank on his name, but dude needs Tommy John.
Oh, yeah. That.
Of course.
The 30-year-old guy, right?
Right.
Yeah, that was weird to me, but hey.
More power to you.
But yeah, it's not an uncommon thing. I think, you know,
he did play a little bit in AAA. Cespedes.
It's not going to be like a, you know, yeah, you give out these rich contracts to international free agents, but I think with you know, all those examples we mentioned, those are all, you know, long-term thinking. It's like, okay, we have them in the minors for a little bit, and then, just bring them up.
Yeah, it's also kind of stupid in that sort of sense of, clearly the Diamondbacks aren't competing this year, so it would be better for your long-term future to try and develop his defense a little bit more, maybe get him a little bit more acclimated to playing in America, and the expectations that he's going to have playing in MLB, get his confidence back, being able to mash in AAA, especially the Pacific Coast League. So it's not shocking at all. It would be more shocking if we had just a glaring need in the outfield and we were attempting to compete. Because you'd be like, well, why the heck are you doing that? You know, you just signed this guy for a ton of money and then you're not going to even use him. But clearly the Diamondbacks are looking to next year or 2 years down the line. Mm-hmm. It would be much better for him to just be ready to go then.
Yeah.
Forget about this season.
Mm-hmm. And I think at some point you're going to see him this season.
Oh, definitely.
Because second, like I said, if someone gets moved, some outfielder needs a DL stint, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you hope it's not an outfielder, but... Yeah. Injuries also do happen.
Yeah.
So what if AJ Pollock gets injured again? What if Peralta and Inciarte go down? Mm-hmm. So I do, unless he's just an absolute tire fire down in AAA, we're definitely going to see him again.
Yeah. I don't think that's a big deal.
Right.
Yeah. The starting rotation, we can just sort of go through it. Again, with Cahill being moved, again, we get to see the debut of Archie Bradley, which is one of those things that, that's a thing you could kind of look forward to this season. Even if the team's bad, it's like, I can see how this guy develops, because, you know, this guy could be a long-term piece.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he's been so highly touted for so long that you get that release of, finally, he's here, let's see what happens.
Yeah, and, you know, he had a really good spring, against spring stats being nothing, but, you know, it's kind of good to see him pitch that well this spring. He didn't particularly pitch well last spring, and exactly. And he had the sort of, he spent most of last year coming back from injury, so.
Yeah,
it's just one of the things, like, you know, just want to see how he does against major league hitters.
Mm-hmm.
The other components of the rotation, you got Mr. Josh Colemanter, opening day starter. Kind of weird, but hey, you know, he'd still be, you know, on any team with a decent pitching staff, probably a 3 or 4 maybe, so whatever. It's cool. You do what you want. You've got Chase Anderson. You've got the aforementioned Bradley. You got Ruby De La Rosa and Jeremy Hellickson. So, yeah, I mean, not the best rotation, like, in any sense of the word, but I think if guys like De La Rosa, Anderson, and Bradley, it's that same sort of thing, like, oh, because get to see how these guys perform, you know, in the big league setting, because, you know, if those guys do perform well enough, the pitching staff might not be the tire fire that everyone thinks it's going to be.
Yeah, maybe Hellickson does just well enough or somehow figures out how to turn his career around, and what if, but at least there's, you know, it should be interesting to watch.
Yeah, Jeremy does Wellickson.
Ha ha ha.
You can't see it right now, but I'm doing that sort of slow arm pump like that one does with a bad pun.
Right. Waggling your eyebrows.
Yeah. See what I'm doing there? But yeah, I think in general, like, the team probably is not going to be good, but it'll at least be interesting to watch, hopefully. Knock on wood.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Just got to figure out what to do with Mr. Trumbo.
He is our forever war.
He is our forever war. But you know who didn't make the team?
John McCain.
Your favorite, Nick Buss.
Oh, Nick Buss! No! I'll have to go to Reno so I can tackle him.
Sounds like a good day trip.
I think it'll be a little bit more than a day trip.
Yeah. I forgot where Reno was for a second. Yeah.
It's pretty far away.
So going away a little bit from the construction of the roster, I'm going to
talk about construction of a different, certain historic ballpark.
Oh, yeah, that's funny to me. This will probably be up after this opening day game starts, this first one between the Cubs and the Cardinals, but probably in progress if I get this edited quickly enough. But Wrigley Field is not in so good shape. It's seems to be still under renovation, like any given road in Pima County. You can probably I'll include a link in the post here to pictures and stuff because they're everywhere. But that might be kind of hilarious to watch. So you should turn that on if you get a chance.
Yeah, the backstory, if you haven't been paying attention to it, is basically Wrigley Field, you know, is super old, mm-hmm. but the Cubs and their new ownership group, well, not really group, it's just a family, but the Ricketts, you know, they bought the Cubs, they want to renovate Wrigley Field, they're pouring all this money into basically rebuilding the bleachers, which is one of the most famous parts of the stadium. It's also hard to avoid on a broadcast. It's virtually impossible. They're not going to be able to film the game. Well, they don't use film anymore, but you get my point. They're not going to be able to broadcast the game without seeing the bleachers.
Mm-hmm.
They're rebuilding them because they weren't safe, and they wanted to kind of upgrade them a bit. There's new video boards, all that sort of fun stuff. Mm-hmm. Problem is, it is not going to be done until maybe May, June, or July, depending on which section. So there's going to be nothing out there. It's mm-hmm. just going to be a big old construction site.
Mm-hmm.
And that is hilarious.
Yeah, because if you've read this website for a bit, there's some playful-ish, but some serious animosity towards the Cubs we have, mostly over that Mesa thing that ended up being turning into Sloan Park now. And it all culminated in hot dogs, as I recall.
Yes. Hot dogs. So that should be good fun. I mean, it's great that baseball's back regardless.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it is a bit amusing that we're celebrating the return of baseball with essentially a game being played at a construction site. And I'm sure when MLB set up the schedule, they were thinking, oh, Wrigley Field will be done because it was supposed to be done by opening day.
And with that, you could say, oh, we're on, you know, we're unveiling these renovations to this historic ballpark as the first thing you see this season. And so that will make good TV, but...
it'll make good TV for a different reason.
Yeah, yeah.
The other kind of odd thing, though, about this game, not that it's being played between... Well, the participants is what is odd. So, you know, last year there was that international game between the Dodgers and the D-backs, so that was why it was first. And traditionally, that's what they've done when they have international games. But otherwise, generally speaking, the tradition has been that the Reds, being the oldest or one of the oldest still existing professional teams, would get the first game of the season. You know, so you would have the Reds, they'd be starting at like 11 o'clock their time or whatever time, and then, you know, other games would start rolling in behind it, but they'd be first. So... it's a bit odd that they're not, they're kind of, they've been moving away from that in recent years. Mm-hmm. The same way the Diamondbacks are going to be playing the Giants tomorrow night, but it's not until 7:10.
Yeah.
When for like the last 5 or 6 years or however many home games that they've had to open up the season, they've done day games. So
I think in the Diamondbacks case, that's to sort of accommodate one of the only national broadcasts they're ever going to get this season.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure it was set up like, okay, well, we need to have a whole day of, because that's also sort of becoming the trend. Mm-hmm. You know, when you have opening day for whatever season it is, you just have a giant block
yeah.
of games, so that you just get people completely immersed in it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, you need a West Coast team, and I haven't looked at the master schedule. I could do it if I felt like it. I just don't.
That is the motto of this podcast.
Yeah, I can look it up, but I'm not going to. fine, I'll look it up.
But
you know, there just may not be a ton of West Coast games to choose from. The Athletics are hosting the Rangers at 10:05 p.m. So,
well, I think maybe they chose.
That may be blackout restrictions.
Yeah, and I think maybe they chose the Diamondbacks game for the natural one because they happen to be playing the
defending champions.
Yeah, yeah,
right. Which is also a bit of an odd thing, and it's not consistent, but it is odd that the Giants aren't starting at home.
Yeah, that is odd.
Starting on the road. Mm-hmm. So that was not great planning. Mm-hmm. Though I guess you can't really predict it because they do bring out the MLB. Scheduled before the season even ends.
That's true. Yeah.
So how would they have known? But jokes on the Giants, because they're not going to be able to really celebrate in front of their home fans until they go back home. Yeah. So let's be real. Between the Giants and the Dodgers being our first two home series, they're not really going to be Diamondbacks home games.
Ugh.
So
that's so terrible.
Yeah, it is.
Put a stop to that, Ken Kendrick.
To kick them out if they're wearing the wrong gear.
Mm-hmm. That'll go over well.
Yes, it definitely will go over well.
So we got opening day tomorrow. We've got Josh Colemanter versus Madison Bumgarner. I hope the Diamondbacks score at least like three or four runs off Bumgarner so we can taunt Royals fans about that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of... That is an interesting thing to watch over the last few years because... Lincecum was first and was just amazing right out of the gate, and that's all anybody ever talked about. And Kane was kind of the guy that was still really good, but people kind of ignored. But he just didn't get as much hype. And then Lincecum started sliding back, and so then it became mm-hmm. Kane's our great guy. Mm-hmm. And then now both of them have kind of faded into the background as Bumgarner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So hopefully he'll fade soon.
That'd be nice, yeah. Yeah, yeah. or yeah, we get three or four runs out of him, or someone hits it inside the park home run. Just really twist that knife. I have nothing against Royals fans. I just like outcomes that inspire pain.
Have you ever been to an opening day game?
I have not. Not for the Diamondbacks, not for anyone, not even like a minor or college team, as I recall. No. I think I wanted to go to – I was planning on going to University of Arizona's opening day, but I think I got called to the work, so.
I've been a couple times. First time I went, the only thing that really stuck out in my mind was I took the light rail in, and it's the first and only time I've taken the light rail. Not that it was a terrible experience, it's just it does add extra time.
Oh, yeah.
Based on where I am, because if I was in Tempe or Mesa, it would make more sense, but I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, it wasn't like it was some sort of... No, wait, maybe I've been to three. Because I was at... Maybe this wasn't a home Maybe this wasn't the season opener. I'm trying to remember. It was 2009,
mm-hmm.
the year that Brandon Webb went down.
That was a season opener.
Okay, so I was at that one, and that was not so fun. You know, obviously you don't know at the time that Webb was going to be out for his career.
Yeah,
but it was still kind of like, oh crap, what happened to Webb? He's getting lit up. Oh no, he's being taken out of the game. Panic. Then there was that one that I just described, going the light rail. It was probably 2010.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, it must have been 2011. I must have gone to opening day for 2011,
mm-hmm.
because if I recall, we played the Reds,
mm-hmm.
and we were sitting behind some drunk Reds fans that were giving Diamondback fans in general some sass because the Reds had actually won their division last year. And so they're saying things like, who's the last time Diamondbacks won? Ha 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 ha. Which is ironic because that year, the Diamondbacks actually won the division. So, in their faces.
Uh huh. Yeah.
Whoever they are. But yeah. That's been about it. I wouldn't say there's anything particularly amazing or special about it. They're fun because it's baseball, and when you haven't seen or gone to a game in a while, it's fun. But it's not like there's anything that happens that's just super magical.
Yeah. You get a longer opening intro. That's about it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would probably feel better if they were coming off of like some sort of playoff or a championship or
mm-hmm.
something like that. But otherwise, it's just, well, we're going to see another 161 of these games.
Mm-hmm.
It also may feel differently for people that live in cities that don't have spring training,
mm-hmm.
where, you know, it's like, I've already been to a Diamondbacks game this year.
Yeah.
So the next one I go to will just be, even though it will actually count this time, it's just another game. Whereas if I lived in Detroit or the Detroit area,
yeah,
opening day for the Tigers really is the first time I've seen baseball since the season ended.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's fine because it's sort of beginning anew, but, you know, it's another game in the long run. Another day closer to death.
Yeah. Death. Also, the giveaway isn't even great. It's a magnet schedule.
Ooh.
So, no. Monday night, 7 p.m. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Sorry, guys.
So, changing gears a little bit here, there was an article on Deadspin this past Thursday that basically posited, if you could change the outcome of one play in any sport, whatever, what would it be? So, like, that just what it sounds like. The example they use, just to help, and I'll link to this article in the post. Someone said, if they had the power, they'd travel back in time and make it so Gordon Hayward's half-court buzzer-beating heave in the 2010 NCAA basketball championship game went in instead of rimming out. And so they sort of invited, like, people in their comments. It's like, okay, what are some stuff, you know, you would change? And there were a lot of I'm just reading through it now. There were a lot of people who are Yankees fans who would say, you know, Mariano Rivera doesn't throw away that one ball in the ninth inning. So, which made me go, ha ha. And some more baseball-related ones, just as examples. Some people said, oh, Alex Gonzalez not messing up that double play right after the Steve Bartman play. Any given amount of Brett Favre interceptions. the Jeffrey Mayer play and from the 1996 ALCS comes up, which if you're too young to remember that, that was when that was between the Orioles and the Yankees, and basically some little kid reaches out in front of the stands when it looked pretty clear like whoever the Orioles outfielder at the time was going to catch it.
Yeah, it was going to be an out.
Yeah, and that sort of. Helped start the legend of Derek Jeter a little bit. Not that that play being different would have hurt any, but it was also like a big momentous swing in that series.
Yeah.
So yeah, stuff like that. Just as an example, and I'll link to it. There's some interesting things if you read the comments there. Thank you. But I was thinking of a few for the Diamondbacks, but one I would definitely think about was in 2002, Luis Gonzalez just goes, nah, this turf here in St. Louis is kind of crappy. I feel like I shouldn't die for that. Which, if you recall, it was near the end of the season in a series against the Cardinals. Someone, actually I have it in front of me, Tino Martinez hit just a pop-up, like, between short and left, and Luis Gonzalez died for it, hit his shoulder real hard at the turf at Old Busch Stadium, which was just basically crappy concrete turf, and separated his shoulder and was out for the rest of the season. Diamondbacks still made the playoffs, but after that point, they kind of limped into it and then got swept in the playoffs.
Right.
So it's one of those things like, well, if you just maybe didn't try as hard, maybe, you know, that whole season goes differently. It's hard to really feel sorry for anyone on that because that's the year after we won a World Series, so.
And it's hard to begrudge someone for trying hard.
Yeah.
And then it turns into a freak accident. But at the same time, you could argue that the 2002 team, like the 1999 team, were better than the team that actually won the World Series. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, the 2001, highlighting the flukiness of the playoffs, just happened to win it all.
Yeah, exactly.
The one that jumps immediately to mind for me is the 2011 NLDS against the Brewers, the last game, because, you know, if we had been able to shut down the 10th inning, then maybe we would have been, but that's also the kind of problem with some of these. I imagine for some people, it's easier to imagine like, oh, we definitely would have won if the shot goes in or a home run goes over the wall.
Yeah.
Or, instead of settling on a triple, you run home and you get a inside the park home run, that sort of thing. Whereas this is a very big hypothetical that we get a shutdown inning in the 10th and then somehow magically win at some point when we hadn't won yet in Miller Park.
Yeah.
But
I mean, another thing from that game that I remember was the ninth inning when we were up and we tied the game, but nobody.
Oh, right, yeah.
Nope. But there were still runners on after Bloomquist had that bunt single to score the tying run. Nobody was able, and there were runners in scoring position too. So, and nobody was able to get that next hit.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is a bit more hypothetical. I mean, a lot of the examples they use are fairly straightforward. This shot goes in. This field goal isn't missed or made, etc. Yeah,
Scott Norwood hits that field goal at the end of Super Bowl 25. The Bills win.
Yeah. But it's a. Like I said, it's a very interesting topic, and you know, if you guys have some, there's probably a few more things in Diamondbacks history, like Steve Finley just times that jump just a slightly better against Todd Pratt in the NLDS in 1999. That's one.
Yeah. This is another big hypothetical. Or in 2007, Game 2, you know, we're already down 1-0 against the Rockies in the NLCS, but if Jose Valverde doesn't walk in a run in the 10th inning, would if he had just had a shutdown inning, or at least, you know, he loads the bases, but he gets out of it, as he frequently did that year, And if we had managed to win that game, would that have swung the game around where maybe we win that series, or at least make it competitive so we don't get swept? Because that was a game I actually was at, and that was just deflating. Where, you know, because if I recall, we came back in the ninth, and so we, you know, the stadium was rocking. We're like, yeah, okay, yeah, we got this, we got this. And then just immediately, Jose Valverde loaded the bases and then walked in a run. And I was like, oh, God damn.
And then he was traded for Chad Qualls and Mother
Beaver. Qualls! The worst thing he ever did was get traded for Qualls and Chris Burke. Chris frickin' Burke.
And there was another name on there. I think it was Juan Gutierrez was there, or was it?
No, Juan Gutierrez was already there. It was a third. Who was it? I thought it was another pitcher, but
I'm looking at that right now. Jose Valverde trade Diamondbacks. Let's see his Wikipedia page. Chad Qualls, Juan Gutierrez, and Chris Burke
was one.
Yeah.
I guess there really was one more. Those are probably the big moments, though, because a lot of the other seasons weren't particularly close. 2008 felt closer than it should have been, because especially the last half of the season, it was just a sort of building of inevitability. Because the Diamondbacks just were not playing well, and the Dodgers were just kind of hanging back.
Yeah.
And it felt like, at some point, they're going to catch us. So there's no one play to point at, and it doesn't feel like there's any one play to point at, really, for anything else for the Diamondbacks. I mean, there might be, though. So if you got one, lay it on us. Or if you've got one for another sport, then...
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something, like, if I were to think of one for another sport, it... definitely would be 2013, Raheem Moore does some freaking good pass coverage, and we don't have to talk about Joe Flacco being elite ever.
Yeah. Yeah, because what if the Broncos win that game? They're the ones who go on to win the Super Bowl.
Because that team was actually probably better than the team that actually made the Super Bowl. And I think it's true in like every sport. The playoffs are just random.
Yeah.
To a point.
It was a fluke play. Yeah. A slight breakdown in coverage. Flacco saw the open guy, hit him, because, you know, that's his money pitch, so to speak, is that's that long vertical. And there's, you know.
And I'm still irrationally, not really, blaming you for that, because that, just to shake the history here, that was the day we recorded the first test show for the old video roundtable. And we were just sort of talking, testing out the format, and you had said something like, oh, that game will be over by halftime.
Jinxed him.
Yeah. Damn you.
Sorry. Obviously, the one I would pick would be, because it's probably the most inevitable razor edge play, would be the 25th Super Bowl.
The Scott Norwood, yeah.
The Scott Norwood kick. Yeah. And it was a difficult kick. It was far away. It was in the wind. Or against the wind, so, you know, it makes sense that he missed it. And, you know, I think there's a lot of misconception. If you're not a Bills fan, people just assume Bills fans hate Scott Norwood, and that's not the case at all. Because when he and the Bills returned to Buffalo after that game, they were, you know, greeted as if they had won, because... you know, it was a difficult game, and they got really close. But that would be one that, you know, if it had just gone in, even if they lose the next three Super Bowls, which is likely because they weren't, none of the other three were close.
Yeah.
At least you have that you can hold on to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, curious of the comments. One good one maybe for the Phoenix Suns is Robert Horry doesn't go all hockey player on Steve Nash in that one series. Nobody has to go off the bench.
Yeah.
To defend your guy, the NBA's weird discipline doesn't come into play.
Right.
Et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah. You know, leave yours in the comments, as I've said, like, 50 times already. We'll end on another we're stealing content ideas from bigger websites sort of thing.
We're shameless.
Yeah, we'll admit it. There was an article on Grantland that went up 2 days ago, presenting the 2015 All-MLB.TV team. And basically, the idea is these are players who you would want to watch no matter what, if you get the opportunity to, no matter, you know, what team they play for, et cetera, just because you want to watch them, because they're fun to watch, they're really good, they're otherworldly for various reasons, et cetera, et cetera. So they have, like, a first team for each position and a second team, but the first team first baseman is our very own Paul Goldschmidt, which makes sense, you know, on a national scale. He's a guy who plays on a team that's not particularly good or in a big market, but he's still a fun player to play. So what we're going to steal from this is what player not on the Diamondbacks would you, given the opportunity, just stop to watch and play at, you know, any moment? Giancarlo Stanton. Just because he has otherworldly power. You know, he plays for a team that you probably won't see too much of, though if they're kind of good this year, you might, which they might be, you might see more of them. But, you know, he does have that sort of transcendental hitting tool with the power. And so, you know, any given moment, you might just get to see a monster home run. And then you get to see the LSD Marlin sculpture, which I unabashedly love. True story. They had a college bowl game in that stadium this past year, and someone finally had the idea, like, in the second half to actually, like, have that thing going when someone scored a touchdown. It was amazing.
That is awesome.
But, yeah, I would say he's my answer. And, you know, he plays for a team I don't particularly hate, so that helps.
That definitely does help. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I'm going to... there's a lot of players I think you can apply that title to, but I think I will stick with Bryce Harper in that, you know, he's got power, he can run around the base paths, and he plays, you know, he goes full bore pretty much every play. Mm-hmm. So he's just fun to watch, but he's also sort of a lightning rod for criticism. Whereas, you know, Mike Trout, everybody loves Mike Trout. The only people who probably don't like Mike Trout are people that are way too into Miguel Cabrera.
And aren't Tigers fans.
Yeah, but he also doesn't really do anything that's particularly interesting or controversial. He just is otherworldly good.
Yeah.
So obviously he would be on the list, no doubt. You know, he would be enough for me to want to tune into an Angels game.
Yeah.
I would probably search my dial for a Nationals game more. And it also helps that the Nationals should be a good team this year.
Yeah. The Nationals should be a really good team this year.
So that means they're going to do terribly.
Yeah, that's how it goes.
I've jinxed them.
Sorry, Nats fans.
I don't know. Maybe it's because I was not a good baseball player, and I certainly wasn't a pitcher, so maybe I just don't understand the finer arts of it, but if you had to stack up the best pitchers versus the best hitters, even though I like low-scoring games and defense and things like that, I would much rather pick a guy who is a great offensive force and a good defender over a pitcher. I'd rather see that sort of just, you know, they do everything on the field as opposed to a guy who's got electric stuff, because to be frank, I can't even really tell most of the time.
Yeah.
So maybe that makes me a Philistine, but I'd much rather watch a Bryce Harper over a Clayton Kershaw. Or even a Yusel Puig. You know, if I'm tuning into the Dodgers for some bizarre reason, then the guy that I'm probably looking for is Puig, because he just goes full out.
He's going to do something interesting.
Yeah, maybe I'm just not savvy enough, but I barely even understand what Kershaw's doing.
I don't think he does either. You ever seen his face?
Yes. Yeah. Kershaw loves Chong.
Tell me about the rabbits again, Granky.
Like ketchup on my beans, Granky. He looks like a guy who is, like, frightened of computers and electricity.
AZSnakePit.com is part of SBNation.com. Go there often. You can follow AZ Snake Pit on Twitter, @AZSnakePit, simple enough. Be sure to like AZ Snake Pit on Facebook. Or you could not do all those things. I'm not your dad. I don't care what that paternity test said. Go away.